Welcome to How to Build a Tent, the podcast on how to make you successful. My name is Matt Williams. Thank you for listening to the show, sharing the show. You can do that by sharing us when you're watching us on the social media sites, live streaming 12 p.m. Pacific. You can share the link on the YouTube if you're listening on YouTube. And if you are listening on iTunes or the other podcast applications, I'm sure there's a way to share it as well. On iTunes, you look at those three little dots at the bottom right. You can share the show. I really appreciate that. Helps get the word out. Helps to continue the growth of this show and get the word out so that we can be a blessing to many, many more people. It's Friday. We made it. I'm so excited for the weekend. I hope you are as well. I have a tennis match coming up, and because of how busy I've been and how so many different things have been going on, I have not played in a long time, so it's going to be a really, really painful match because I'm going to be totally rusty. And if you play tennis, you know you definitely need to be in the zone or you're going to be making stupid mistakes. So I'm going to look forward to making dumb mistakes, but I'm going to be thankful to be playing tennis in Hawaii for the little time I have remaining. Got my HTBT hat on. For those of you watching, you're going to be able to buy one of those in the store when our website comes out, coming up really soon. Stay tuned to that. I've also told you about the portfolio. You'll be able to peek into my portfolio through a subscription and all that good stuff that's coming our way. Next Monday, so it's going to be a show that's coming out Tuesday. I'm really excited. We have an artist coming on the show, and we're going to talk about the business of art. And this is going to be applicable not just for artists, but anybody who is doing design work, anything UX, UI. We're going to talk about just the art of selling, or the business of selling art. I guess it could be an art as well. And what you have to do something like that, because art is such a funny thing. It's very like in the eye of the beholder-esque, I guess is a better way to say that, because a painting in and of itself is just the cost, the time that went into a painting. But what makes a painting so valuable is the demand for it. It's kind of like money, actually, and it's just as much as valuable as what people think. So we're going to get into that, talk about pricing. We're going to talk about getting into galleries and some of the surprises and struggles. I'm really looking forward to that, so stay tuned to that interview as well. If you have any other people you would like me to interview or professions you'd want to hear more about, maybe a business lawyer. I have a few friends that are in the law profession. I'm sure would love to do this show. Reach out to me. Find me on How to Build a Tent. You can email me, matt@howtobuildatent.com. Please give me a follow, like me on the social media sites, and just reach out to me. I'd love to hear from you. Appreciate it with any recommendations that you may have. Let's see what else. Oh, I have to do my contractual obligation. We are part of the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Go over to fightlaughfeast.com. Put in HTBT in the memo field and you'll get this mug for free. And along with that subscription, you get a bunch of other benefits, new exclusive content for members only that comes out all the time. David just does such great work over there. And you'll get to be part of the network and what God is doing. And that is an amazing feeling to have, to know that you are contributing to what the Lord is doing. Speaking of that David guy, we had another one of our good conversations. I haven't talked to him in a long time because, again, I've been busy. We had a good conversation, was it yesterday or maybe the day before? And we were talking about investing, and I really have gotten him into investing. And we were just talking about one of the side benefits of investing, besides the benefits of actually making money and, you know, making more than you would if you just had your money in a savings account, is the mind shift change that happens. And you don't even have to really invest a lot of money to have this happen, but just to see, I think it's just seeing the tangible or like the visual from day to day or hour to hour, depending on how long you look at your portfolio for or how often you do, and seeing how the price fluctuates up and down and seeing your money go up and down, it really just gives you this perspective on cost benefit analysis, on other things too, not just investing. And you just start seeing the world in a very different way. And it just reminded me in that conversation to remind you guys that you need to be investing. You need to be having a strategy for retirement, and not just for the long-term returns that you'll have, but also because that mind shift is healthy, and just having a focus on your money and seeing and trying to be the best stewards of it, of saving it, of putting it, investing it in companies, and using it for the glory of God. Just all of that investment helps you do that better. So I wanted to encourage you with that. All right, now let's get into some of the topics that I wanted to talk about today. And the first one is this electric vehicle push. Now, we know Tesla has pretty much dominated the electric vehicle market. Chevy had the Volt, which is just a terrible car. I think it went like 30 miles, not per gallon, just 30 miles period, and then it was done. 30 miles for a full tank of charge, or however you quantify how long you can go in an electric car. I don't know. I don't have an electric car. Probably won't for some time, if ever. And then this week we've seen Volkswagen come out with one, Mercedes come out with one, which they're Daimler, I think, is the company that owns Mercedes. And then I saw today Ford's coming out with an electric truck, and they are making a push to the electric, in the electric space as well, even though they haven't had that much success. And I was just thinking about this. I really disdain it. I've been disdaining the electric car company for so long. It's probably because I just think it is so counterproductive to what their goal is. And it drives me nuts, because then they become pretentious in a lot of ways too. If you own an electric car, I hope you're not like that. I'm not saying all electric car vehicle owners are like this. In fact, I know that Tesla is a pretty cool car in a lot of ways. It's fast, it has a lot of torque. They're nice cars, they look good. So I'm not hating on you if you have an electric car, but if you are those people, and they're typically, I found them early on in the Prius world, where they're like kind of like smug and they think they're better than you because they have this hybrid car. And I just want to like yell at them, where do you think that electricity comes from? It comes from coal, because we don't invest in nuclear power plants anymore. I came from California, and in fact, we took down that San Clemente power plant, or the nuclear power plant. We don't use it anymore, and that's like the cleanest form of energy, and we're not even doing that. We're just funneling electricity, or funneling coal into electricity to get these hybrid cars, and they think they're saving the universe, but they're just burning coal. Not to mention how much damage these batteries do when you have to get rid of them. They are like so much more harmful to the environment. So the combination of the batteries being harmful, the coal burning, I don't think it's that much better for the environment than good old gasoline. Call me crazy. But just what drives me over the top is just the smugness of them, like the condescending, like, oh, I drive an electric vehicle because I care about the environment so much more than you. You're probably doing more damage to the environment than someone who's driving a beautiful F-150 Raptor truck. Oh, I want to get one of those. Or, you know, another big truck, another big car gas guzzler. Anyways, and then also from a business perspective, it drives me nuts, because you're paying a premium that you're probably not going to get paid back for as long as you have the car, because the battery goes out, you have to replace the battery, you have to replace the engine, and you end up just getting a new car. So you're really just spending more money to do worse for the environment, and you feel more superior than the normal person. So anyways, that's my feeling about it. But then I came to the realization that as long as the government isn't subsidizing these things like Tesla, and I think they do it with Cruise. I think they give like vouchers and tax breaks and things like that. But as long as these companies like Ford, Mercedes, you know, they're doing this, they're coming out with these cars, they're trying to make it work, I should just let, you know, I should just be cool about it. You know, like, all right, yeah, you do your thing. And hey, maybe it'll work out and these electric cars will become awesome. Maybe we'll wake up to the amazing blessing of nuclear energy and start reinvesting in nuclear power plants, and we'll get really awesome electric vehicles with awesome energy, and we will be, you know, helping the environment, and we'll have cheap energy, and it'll be really cool cars with a lot of torque. Because I mean, honestly, electric car for electric truck would be amazing because of how much torque the electric engine can create. Or is it a motor? I think it's technically a motor if it's electric. So I'm not going to be any more like against it, or I'm not going to have those like those feelings where I just need to let go. I'm just going to be okay with it. And that's where I'm ending up with that. Another awesome, it's not another awesome, because I don't think the electric cars are awesome right now, but another story that is awesome is Jeff Bezos and his company, where he's sending people, or he's planning on sending people, not just to outer space, but to the moon. And what struck me about this is that he wants to manufacture goods on the moon and then send them back to Earth. And it's amazing to me because, one, I've never thought of that before. But then when you think about it, what kind of world are we going to live in 15 to 20 years when we're going to have people going to work on the moon, hanging out in the space colony on the south pole of the moon, and shipping goods back? And what does that mean for business? How can we find advantages, competitive advantages, to doing that? What could we do on the moon? It's like, oh, that is such a crazy, crazy thing to think about. It's funny, I go back to a story when I was a young buck and I was interning for a management training program. Like, a select group of people got to go through this course where the company prepared you for being a manager, just like the program states, management training. And I had a question about property rights because it was in the real estate space. And I asked, what are we doing about, what are we doing about property rights in outer space? Now, I don't know if you know this, but you can have property rights in the sky, and like, you can't block other buildings because some people own the sky. You can own minerals in the ground. It's not just like the land that you own that's like where you build things on top of, but there's the sky and there's underground mineral rights, they call them. And I just had a stupid question, like, well, what about outer space? And it was a stupid question. As soon as I said it, I knew I'd just be an idiot. And then the guy I asked was looking at me like, oh my gosh, how did you get into this program? But now it's like, you really got to consider that stuff. Like, who owns the moon? Like, what is Jeff Bezos going to do when he plants this factory on? Can he buy like space? Who's he buying the moon from? I mean, he can afford it. I saw another statistic. He's investing $1 billion a year into his space company. $1 billion. I can't even fathom that. He is putting his own money. He's selling Amazon shares every year to invest $1 billion, not $1 million, $1 billion with a B. Bravo. $1 billion in a company. It's mind blowing. Anyways, if this thing works out, I mean, if we start to see these companies start sending people to outer space, if we start seeing manufacturing in the moon, and apparently he thinks it could be a lot cheaper than manufacturing in other countries, that is going to be amazing. Like, who's going to govern the moon? Who gets it? Do we get it because we planted the flag on the moon? Do we own the moon as the United States? I don't know. It's a crazy thing to think about, in my opinion. And one of the things that they were able to do is, thanks to Elon Musk, actually, it kind of came up with the idea of reusing rockets and getting rockets to land and be able to be reused, refueled, instead of just letting them explode or letting them fall into the water and then never use them again. And I've also thought about that, like, while thinking about this moon landing stuff, is why didn't the government ever think about that? Why didn't the government ever think about reusing rockets? And it's probably just the simple reason, and I have no reason to doubt this, is that governments aren't designed to cut costs. Governments aren't organized that way. You don't get rewarded to cut costs. And that might be an interesting solution to this bloated government that we have. If anyone has a little inside tip to Trump or somebody who's overseeing management of a big government entity, is why don't you start putting in incentives for people to cut back on their budgets? Imagine, like, NASA is really smart. Like, the people that work at NASA are really smart. Why didn't they ever think about that? Because their mindset is not at all about cutting cost. And I've had some good conversations with people and saying that there is a role for them to play, the government to play, and coming out with new things, spending a lot of money on research. I'm not talking about that. But there should also be, on top of spending money on research and doing things that the private companies aren't set up to do because they'll lose so much money, there should be like some incentives for us to start cutting back on our costs. And I won't get in any more into that because I've already talked about that before. But it's a good point to remember. We need to figure out how to start cutting back costs. Granted, most of our costs are our government spending is entitlements, and that's a whole nother animal. But maybe there can be some incentives to play in that as well. The next story that I saw that was just absolutely fascinating, I loved it, because one of my biggest pet peeves is this gender pay gap myth and how employers are so evil because they pay women 30% less than men. And I always just come back, well, then why doesn't a smart business person just hire a whole woman staff and then pay them 30% less and make 30% more than their competitors because they have men on their staff? And that obviously doesn't work because it's obviously not true. And I love this article that is talking about Uber and how Uber drivers have males making more than women. And it's like, whoa, Uber is taking more money from the female drivers than the male drivers? I tweeted that on Twitter, and I tweeted that on Twitter, it's redundant. And I just like was being sarcastic about it, but it's funny because obviously they're not doing that, right? So what is the difference? And you read in the article, it says this: the authors found that the gender gap is caused by three factors: how long they've been driving on the platform, preferences over where and when to work, and driving speed. The authors include economists from the Graduate School of Business at Stanford Institute of Economic Policy Research at Stanford University and Jonathan Hall, chief economist and director of public policy at Uber. This suggests that as the gig economy grows and brings more flexibility and employment, women's relatively high opportunity cost of non-paid work time and gender-based preference differences can perpetuate a gender earnings gap even in the absence of discrimination. So they're saying here that it is absent of discrimination. That is not the reason there is a pay gap at Uber. Earnings are not related to the time of day drivers work, and the gender wage gap was not explained by the choices of customers. So it's not the customers picking men over women. It's not discriminatory policies by Uber, but it's just the behavior of men and women who decide to drive for Uber. And that is another great thing about tech, is that these culture warriors, quote unquote, aren't going to be able to hide behind their like flat out arguments that are unproven, but we're going to be able to prove it because like Uber, they collect data. They know everything about the drivers. They know everything about the customers, where they go, how often they spend money, who they picked, who they don't pick, who they rate, who they don't rate, how long the trip was, how fast they were driving. All that information is collected. And so they are able to prove that it's just natural that women don't work as much, they don't drive as fast, they don't do as many hours as men do, and therefore the men make way more money. I think it's $989 a month is the average male earns versus the average female earns $361 a month. And the other thing that I love about this story is it proves that gender is a thing. This new area to be employed where there can be people who rent their cars and rent their driving time to drive other people, to take their capital, their cars, and use them to make money. No one told men to work more than women. No one told women to work less than men or to not drive as fast. But out of the large scale population, we're starting to see gender differences. And it wasn't cultural. The society didn't tell male Uber drivers to drive faster. It's too new of an industry. There was no guidebook that Uber gave that said, men, you need to drive more often. You need to pick up people in this area. You need to, you know, drive faster. Women, you can't go in these areas. That was not done. But it was just the natural differences in men and women's preferences on how they drive, where they work, how often they work, that we see this difference in pay gap. And it just proves that men and women are different. It has nothing to do with culture. No, culture hasn't had this technology around long enough to be influential in it. And that is just one of the things that I absolutely love about this story. All right, it's Friday. So that means that Saturday, Sunday, whenever you take your day of rest, make sure you take your day of rest, unplug, trust God to be your provider, and take time to spend with your family, refresh yourself, take some time to relax, to think, to pray, to think about what you're doing with your life long term. It is going to be one of the major keys of your success if you can start doing that every weekend, every week, and be consistently doing that. Your family will benefit, you yourself will benefit, and your career and your businesses will benefit as well. Trust me. Now let's go out and be successful.